Welcome to the Confident ROI. Great show today. We had Brandon Burkhart on the show today, and we talk about the cannabis industry. Brandon has been in the cannabis industry for a number of years, grew up in the industry, has solved a number of problems within it, from getting products you need to grow it, to solving lighting problems, to dealing with the economics that are changing the industry. And as the industry goes from being hidden to being legalized, how that's affecting things, what's going on. If you are interested in investing in the cannabis industry, or hey, what's all going on in this industry, this will shed a lot of light on that. And Brandon shares with you his stories and experiences, some mistakes he made along the way, some mistakes he's seeing investors make as they come into the cannabis industry. So it's a fun interview, very informative. Hope you enjoy it. And if you like it, please review it on iTunes. That would be very helpful. Thanks. Here's the interview with Brandon. Brandon Burkhart, welcome to the Confident ROI.
Hey, Alex, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I've been looking forward to this. I woke up this morning, I'm like, I got to be on with Brandon today. He's got a lot to share with the audience. We've never covered this industry, and I gotten to know you. Was involved as part of the investor group that bought one of your companies, a very successful agricultural supply company that we'll go into detail on. And Ken Alston introduced us, and Ken's not been on the show yet, although he's promised to be, but he hasn't. But yeah. I knew I wanted to have you on the show when we were talking about you want a license to grow cannabis in Nevada, Las Vegas area, and you're explaining to us. But you were asking, hey, how do I apply Six Sigma, Kaizen, this to develop a business that can really perform with the cost pressure and competition that's inevitably going to happen. So, Brandon, can you explain to the audience your background in this industry, how you came up, how you've solved different problems that you've seen within the industry as it's grown from something that wasn't front and center to now a lot of investors are chasing it, putting tens of millions of dollars in, and what you're seeing there. So we're going to cover all that today, but you know, just let the audience know, hey, who's Brandon Burkhart?
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, I've always had a passion for cultivating cannabis since I was 16 years old. It's just something that, I don't know, I was always drawn to. I was never a real huge cannabis user. Just loved to watch the plant grow and be a part of that. And just kind of worked up through there through 16 as a kid. You know, it's really cool to watch that. And then I opened my first hydro store at the age of 23. I ran that while I was also cultivating. Did some import-export stuff. I was 23, my first trip to China.
And what's hydro? Hold on.
Hydro. Oh, hydroponics. So hydroponic store. So hydroponic stores are retail locations that supply cultivators with all the products they need. It's a niche market for cultivation of cannabis. And that was a huge learning experience. Then got into the China thing, doing a lot of import export over there, designing and building products, working with engineers over there to create new products. And then just kind of slowly but surely built that up over the last 10 years. And then recently your guys has had an acquisition. And took a lot of that money and put it into this Nevada project because, you know, I love to sell, you know, garden equipment, but what my real core passion is the cultivation of cannabis. So now that we're able to do it above board and legally, that's mostly what I'm drawn to and what I want to do. And I think that at the end of the day, you know, I think everyone should always ask themselves, like, is this what you really want to be doing? And what I really want to be doing is cultivating cannabis. So that's what makes me happy, and that's what I enjoy doing. So that's why I sold and transitioned into that project.
Well, and I've heard the longer presentation you give on your background, and that's what we want to talk about today and going into that deeper, because you started this hydroponic store. How old were you?
23.
And you saw there wasn't that source for materials and what was needed as a cultivator?
You know, there was that source there. All comes down to, I have this saying that you have to buy right. And that is my most important. That's how I ran Hydroponics Inc. That's how I'm running Clover. If you buy right, you can always, if you get into a sticky situation, you can get out of that product or that SKU. You're making a larger margin. Your bottom line, your EBITDA is greater. So I always try to buy right. And that means, if it means going to Sri Lanka to buy your cocoa, or, you know, going to China, Guangzhou, Shenzhen, to meet with manufacturers and buy your equipment over there, well, that's what you should do at all the time. You know, that's the most important thing. And one of the most important factors in business is buying right. So, you know, buying direct. And that's what I've always tried to do.
And you saw that there, and one of the things you mentioned was Clover, which is your Nevada grow that's licensed by, was it Clark County or is it?
Lincoln County, Nevada.
Lincoln County, Nevada. Yeah. And we'll get to Clover in a second, because you want a big opportunity and you had to make a decision on what to do with your business that you had grown. But buying right. So you start hydroponics, you start dealing with, I would assume, kind of the main distributors and manufacturers. And what did you notice?
You know, I noticed that, you know, the main distributors, Sunlight Supply at the time, Hydro Farm, and BWGS at the time were the main distro companies. And, you know, what I realized is if you just put a little bit of extra time into sourcing, you can find the same exact products that they're selling in their catalog for about 60% less overseas. Now, I know it gets a little bit scary to just send that amount of money. You know, my first order, I think, was about $60,000 that I sent over to China. And I know that gets a little scary. And that's what I've seen in the industry, like my competitors. They're scared of, you know, being taken advantage of and sending that much money overseas to do that initial transaction. But I think just taking a trip there and meeting the people face to face and taking a tour, you know, really changed. So that it was the little things that mattered with Hydroponics Inc. It's not the big items. It's the small rope ratchets, or maybe the timers, the plant tags, the trellis netting, that are recurring purchases that I was really making the big margins on. The lights and the big stuff are cool. Like, I did import a lot of that, but the main thing I focused on was the reoccurring goods, that the soft goods that they're continuously using. And if you look at your bottom line at the end of the year or the end of the quarter, you see that substantial increase in margin. Really, I used that money to fuel Hydroponics Inc. And that's how I got to where I was today.
All right. And so it was scary to go there. It was scary. Probably, was it scary to send the money, or scary to go there? And did you have any good stories about meeting any character the other side of the world?
So many stories. You know, I met this, it was crazy, because there's a lot of guys that travel alone, and some guys just traveling, you know, hanging out. But there's one great story where I just, you know, started walking in Hong Kong and met up with a gentleman that was taking pictures on the dock, and we hung out, had a few beers. Then we met up with another gentleman named Tom, which is a chemical engineer that was, you know, working in China. And then next thing you know, we go out and we're partying, and we just met each other. And what's great about traveling like that is when you travel alone, you're like, you, you're so much more open to receiving, I guess, a relationship and just kind of meeting new people. And so you're just so much more open, and then, you know, got to go out and have a good time with those guys. And there's a lot of those stories, and you meet some really cool people traveling that are more open to just say hello and hang out, you know? So yeah, there's a lot of that. You know, it was a learning experience, and I always did it alone. Like, I never traveled with anybody else. I was always on business by myself, and it was fun. It was a good time.
Cool. Did you ever have any deals that you didn't get what you wanted or you expected?
Yeah, it happened to me one time. And it was actually, I blame it on myself. It was laziness on my part. I had ordered a container of air conditioners, and it was from an off supplier that I hadn't done business with before. And I ordered 24,000 BTU air conditioners, and they took off the label, they took off the label of 18,000 BTU air conditioners and put 24,000 BTU air conditioners on there. So when I got them in, I had bought a container of 18,000 BTUs, but they said 24, and I had sold some of those to my customers expecting they'd be able to cool their lights with a 24,000 BTU. In fact, they were 18. That cost me about $100,000, because number one, like, I would never stick a customer with something that it was my fault. So I ended up, giving back a lot of people their money on their air conditioners, which even cost me more, just stocking it and storing it. But it was a lesson learned. It happened early. I think I was like 25 when that happened. And I never did that again. That was the only problem I've ever had, really, with that. And I blame that on myself. That was my fault. Being lazy
how did you prevent that from happening again?
You put in the work. You either, if you're going to deal with a new manufacturer that you haven't dealt with before and you're making that large of a purchase, take the trip. The trip's probably going to cost you $3,000 to $4,000 depending on how you travel, but it's worth taking the trip, meeting the manufacturer face to face, taking a tour of their factory on that large of a purchase. Now, if you're buying like $10,000, $15,000, worth of goods, and maybe you don't take the trip. But when you're buying a $100,000 container, just jump on a plane and go over there.
Yeah, it's probably harder for someone to defraud someone if they've met them and looked them in the eye.
Yeah, And you get an idea of who you're doing business with. You take a look at their factory, you take a look around and you see what's going on. And you can kind of get an idea of who you're about to send money to.
Did you ever meet any of these guys and like, I can't do business with them?
Several times. Yeah.
Yeah.
All the time. All the time. Just warehouses and factories that are a complete disaster. Stuff just everywhere, very unorganized, very unclean. There's a lot of that. So once you walk into that, you know that if their warehouse and their offices are in such array, you can only imagine what your equipment's going to be like. So I several times definitely has happened.
That's good to know. So just going there and eyeballing what's the factory look like, what's their operations look like, you can get a sense of whether you want to do business with them.
100%, 100%.
And so then you're selling fertilizer, soils, products to grow cannabis. And then you noticed there was a need on, what did you notice about the lighting and what problem you could solve there?
So, yeah, going into Lux Lighting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we started...
Which is Brandon's lighting company.
Yeah, yeah. I started Lux Lighting about 14 months ago. We launched 14 months ago. It took me about a year and a half to make that light. And it was, you know, I'd like to say it was, we really, you know, are like lighting engineers and we're, you know, technical and we're just really cultivators at heart.
You're users.
We're users. We understand what we need and what we want, and we're growers. So we knew what we wanted in a light, and we didn't see it out there. And just some small changes on, you know, our main competitor is Gavita in the market. And with Lux Lighting, it was just a group of like, me and my buddy Kirby in a garage. He builds trophy trucks for 4-wheel parts. He builds Greg Adler's truck. And we sat in the garage cutting metal, you know, him and welding and cutting and with a PPFD meter. And PPFD meter, just to, you know, give you guys a rundown, it measures the energy that a light produces on the canopy. So we're in there with a PPFD meter measuring how much energy that this light is putting down. And what was crazy is Gavita, the biggest company, you know, they just sold for $175 million to Hawthorne, one of the largest companies in the lighting company. We're testing their light and it's not throwing down as much light as what we just made out of some aluminum and this reflector that we made out of aluminum and played with it. I'm like, we're like confused. We're like, wow, like this light we just made in our garage is throwing down way more PPFD than the biggest lighting company in the industry. So we, you know, then
it's going to affect the yields, right?
100%. Yeah. And that's what it's doing. It's affecting the yields now. And, you know, at the time, you know, that year and a half of product development on that light, you know, we did test it under different rooms and we were getting more yields. And then, you know, I just didn't know, because Lux Lighting is probably one of the fastest growing lighting companies in the industry right now. But I didn't know, like I didn't really predict like how fast it would grow, you know? So just having those, just testing the light, is so critical and doing those tests and doing the data. And then we got with a lighting engineer at that point and a designer. My designer was in Shanghai. My lighting engineer was here in Los Angeles. And we just made, you know, the best possible reflector that we believe that could ever be made. You know, it's just the mirrored corners, the, you know, the way it's shaped, the design. And with that, from Gavita to Lux, we're seeing a 27% increase in PPFD down on the canopy. And that's equating to a half pound more per light. So guys with a 40 light room, one of our biggest customers, Jungle Boys, has a 40 light room that they're running and they're getting 20 pounds more per room. And that equates to $60,000 a run. And that's $60,000 every 2 months. That's like $360,000 extra a year in that one room. So with those equations, they're taking down their old Gavitas, taking down their old lights and putting in Luxes, just because they paid for himself the first run.
And so, cost wise, is what's the difference in cost between Gavita and Lux?
So recently Gavita and Lux were about the same price point. Lux was a little bit less. Now Gavita has just dropped their price to fight Lux. We believe to fight us, you know? So, Lux Lighting will usually run you about 300 to 325. A Gavita now is selling for about 250 to 265. So they played, it looks like Evita played the price game. And that's, you know, we should probably get into that too, but that's what we've seen to combat Lux Lighting. They've dropped their bottom line, which in my opinion, devalued the brand and made it the, like, the lower brand now in the industry, it seems like. And when I built Lux, you know, go in, we just happened to make the best light. We didn't, like, we were just trying to make a better light on that we could use in our grows to get more yields. But, you know, when we built Lux, I sat down in the office with a group of growers, me, you know, everyone that works for Lux Lighting cultivates cannabis. That's a big rule. You have to be a cultivator to work for Lux Lighting. So we sat down in an office and we wanted to know why we did this. Like, why are we doing this? What do we believe? And before we even released the light, we knew what the company believed, what the company believed in, and why we were doing it. And we built everything on that. We built our mission statement. We built our branding, our boxes. We built our booklets, our display books, our catalogs. We built the website. We built our Instagram. Everything is built on a belief of what the company believes. And then we disseminated that to the market. And I think that's important with any company, is to find a common ground with your customer base. And that's what Lux Lighting did. Lux Lighting found that common ground of a belief, and we believe what our customers believe, and our customers believe what we believe, and it creates somewhat of a religion. And now when you put on a Lux hat and you put on a Lux t-shirt, you know that you're representing the same beliefs you have. And it feels good, it feels empowering, and it feels, and not only does that work with your customers, but it has a massive impact on your employees. My employees believe in the company. They're not concerned with their paycheck every month. I mean, obviously that's a concern, but they have drive and passion to work for the company. And so not only does it go into your customers, but your employees become empowered and everyone's on the same page and everyone is striving for that greater, you know, good and to grow the company. And this is the first time that I've built a company that way. And I am blown away in what it actually does. You know,
can you give any examples of, you know, how an employee handled something or how you guys handled a tough decision that maybe was out of alignment with what the company believes?
That wasn't in alignment with what the
company... Yeah, how has it helped?
So it helps with the energy. It helps with the energy and the work ethic of the employees. Because if the employee feels that they're part of something, you know, if you work for Apple or if you work for Google or whatever, you're empowered. You're like, I work for this and this is what we're doing and we're going here and this is the plan. But I've seen in it in the work ethic. I see it in the emails. When a customer gets an email, you know, and instead of saying, yeah, they ask a question about the light or whatnot, you know, and, you know, this, we communicate, you know, this light is for growers, by growers, and it's who we are, and we are cultivators. And to have a company come out and say that changes the game, because there's this huge disconnect in the cannabis industry with actual cultivators the cultivators that founded this industry is getting kind of taken over by the corporate giant. And that right there has an impact on the cultivators that, you know, kind of bent the law, grew gray, you know, they've been through some hard times, you know, we've been to jail, you know, I don't want to go there, but yeah, we've been to jail, you know, we've had problems and, you know, we've worked hard and we've been through the struggles. And now that we're here in 2018 with full legalization, you know, you have this corporate, you know, giant coming in and it's making a huge impact on the guys that they actually started this industry. You know,
it's creating opportunities as well. I mean, you guys are able to compete against the corporate buying out the other lighting company. But we were also talking off air that you've seen a lot of money coming in and it's doing things that isn't going to work. I mean, literally from like a physics and growing standpoint, they're investing tens of millions of dollars and people know within the industry, it's not going to work, but people are rushing in. Is that creating opportunities as well?
With the mistakes that with the mistakes of the builds that some of the large corporations are doing?
Yeah. Large corporations, as well as, you know, you got these investor groups, you know, Joe Montana is investing in it. So much money's coming in. And what are you seeing that, hey, people that are like, hey, this is a great idea. What are you seeing that people are making mistakes at?
People are making mistakes by hiring consultants that don't know what they're doing is the main thing, you know? So you would expect, say there's a private equity group that's looking about getting in the cannabis industry and they're like, hey, we need to hire somebody that's been cultivating cannabis for the last 20 years. You know, they go, they find a consultant, that consultant's like, yeah, I've been cultivating cannabis for 20 years, this and that. I would hire the guy that's been cultivating cannabis for 20 years to consult on a large scale greenhouse build. I'd hire a guy that's been cultivating cucumbers for the last 20 years to do a large scale greenhouse build. And that's what they're having, that disconnect, when they should be hiring the guy that's been growing veggies, not the guy that's been growing cannabis. Because the guy that's been growing cannabis has been doing it in his backyard. He's been doing it in his garage, basement, or bedroom. He doesn't know large scale agriculture. And that's where cannabis is going. You know, cannabis is a commodity and we all need to remember that. And it all comes down to large scale ag. How does large scale ag, you know, build these greenhouses? So I've seen some stuff in Desert Hot Springs that just blows my mind. You know, there's a calculation of a length of a greenhouse compared to a wet wall. And I know I'm going to probably get into some technical stuff, but there's a lot of mistakes I see on builds, that stuff that's just kind of common sense in the ag world. But you even ask some of the cannabis growers, you know, you talk about a wet wall, which is very, like, everyone in ag knows what a wet wall is, but in the cannabis, you know, it's like, what's a wet wall? Exactly. I mean, you should not be growing greenhouses, you know, so, or building, you should not be consulting on builds of greenhouses. So that's what I see. Just, you know, I think these big private equity and VCs need to be hiring large ag guys and then have a guy on the board or a cannabis guy that knows the genetics, that knows the plant, that understands terpene content, CBD and THC, and you know, that understands the plant. But the guy that's actually consulting on the build comes from large ag. You know, that's my opinion.
It's combining the two, because cannabis is coming out of the bedroom in the garage, and the light industrial building. And it sounds like, and you're moving towards greenhouse, which is where big agriculture has grown things when they want to grow it longer than one season, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's greenhouse cultivation. You know, you can grow all year, pretty much utilizing the sun. You know, that's the main part. You know, with
but that's different than growing it under lights in an industrial building. But investors are, and a lot of the growers, that's where their experience is, where they can just extrapolate. But it's different when you're using the big fiery ball of hydrogen versus a Lux light, even when it's throwing off a lot of
PPFD.
Yeah, I got the P right.
No, yeah, it is different. You know, I personally prefer growing and utilizing the sun. You know, even though I own Lux Lighting, my heart and what I love to do is mostly greenhouse cultivation. Now, we do use our Lux Lights in greenhouses for supplemental lighting, but I just like the feel of a greenhouse. I like being in a greenhouse. I don't like being in a warehouse. So that's just where my heart is. And like I started this conversation off, I always think it's most important to do what you love instead of, you know. So I always look at what do I love doing, and that's what I'll do. And that's why I'm doing greenhouse cultivation.
Well, and also, I mean, one of the things is, You're doing a greenhouse build in Nevada. How many square feet?
276,000
square feet. And one of the things that the greenhouse that's interesting is it's as a cost advantage. And within the cannabis industry, now that it's legalized in different states, we're seeing that the price of cannabis on a per pound basis, like in Oregon, Washington, is significantly less than other locations. What kind of factor? One, it's less than half price, right?
Compared to Nevada, Oregon and Washington are sitting around $775 per pound. Nevada is sitting about $1,800 to $2,400. California is sitting around $1,300 to $1,500 right now. So Nevada has the highest price of cannabis on the West Coast.
And what was it 10 years ago?
Oh, 10 years ago, they didn't even have market analysis on cannabis. So I could tell you what it was 4 years ago. Four years ago, price of cannabis in Nevada was around $3,500 to $3,500. So yeah, you can see that price compression, you know.
So by legalizing it, it's and more people are growing it, the price is coming down.
Obviously, and then that's you know, supply and demand. Obviously, it's going to go down. I mean, it's a commodity, so we do have this time where the price of cannabis is at a okay level right now, where guys can is a viable business. You know, where guys are successful, but I think that over time, yeah, cannabis the price will drop, and that's when you need you. As a company, you're really going to need to go back to how did you buy right? Are you in that product for the right price? That's what it all comes down to in business. Did I buy right? So, and that happens with utilizing the sun. So your energy cost is low. You get to use the sun to cultivate cannabis. Also implementing Kaizen. I think implementation of Kaizen improved processes and procedures, lean farming practices, you know, just little implementations. And what's crazy is it's right there. Like that information and that knowledge is right there with large scale agriculture. But you need to have that cannabis cultivator on your team as well. So you take from large scale ag, where they're using conveyor belt systems, auto pot filling systems. They're paying attention to touches. You know, how many times did we touch that plant? So all that information is right there. It's just, are you willing to go to that side and get it and bring it into cannabis? So, and that's what we're doing at Clover. You know, that's what we're focusing on, lean farming practices and doing large ag with, you know, my, what I know about cannabis. So.
Yeah. And so growing, traditionally they've grown cannabis indoors under lots under the artificial lights. But that drives you up. Lights costs and electricity costs. Is that one of the highest costs for a grower?
I think that's probably about the second highest expense. Employment being number one.
Yep.
Electrical being number two. And then, you know, everything else after that, you know, nutrition and whatnot. But yeah, so that being that, that's the second biggest expense of a cannabis cultivator. Yeah, that's to get rid of that and just use the sun. It dramatically improves the bottom line. With Clover, we could produce a pound of cannabis for about $175. Currently, the market value for that same pound of cannabis is $1,850. You know, I expect cannabis in the next 5 to 10 years to drop to $500 a pound. And that's what I'm ready for. If I could open up a hydro shop and make over a 50% margin, well, I'd open that hydro shop today. You know, I'd open it right away. So with producing cannabis for $175 a pound and selling it for $500, well, you know, I'm making over 50%. So that's still, I'm excited for that time because there's going to be some fallout in the industry. Some guys are going to be going out of business when the prices get that low, but some guys will strive, you know.
What's the typical cost per pound to produce in an indoor industrial warehouse?
Usually it's about $750 to $800 a pound to produce.
So yeah. So in Oregon, that price in Washington, the price is getting to the marginal cost to produce it.
Yeah, exactly.
And Adam Smith was right.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that's what you're, you know, and look, this all depends on how good of a cultivator you have working for you. If you have, that's an average $750 to $800. But if you have like a very good cultivator that's producing, you know, 3 pounds per light, you know, you can get, obviously with more production, your cost to produce goes down. So you can get that price down to about $450, you know, to $600, which, you know, gives you some of that margin room, but is that enough margin, you know? So, you know, there are some cultivators doing that, but average is $750 to $800 a pound.
Wow. So, I mean, it's one thing to have a 20% cost advantage. It's another thing to have 65 to 70% cost advantage.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You can do that for a while. Tell people about Clover, what it is, how you got it approved, where it is, why you chose the area.
I'd love to.
What are its beliefs?
What's its why, right?
Yeah.
What do we believe? So Clover is a pretty cool project. So what I love about Nevada is there's currently 121 cultivation licenses active in the state of Nevada. In California, right now there's 3,800 active cultivation licenses. That is a huge difference, you know, and with cannabis, you cannot traffic over state lines. You can't send California cannabis to Nevada. So those 121 licenses in Nevada have to fill Las Vegas's and Reno's need for high demand tourist cannabis. You know, 4,300 million people a year flying to Las Vegas.
43 million. There.
What?
I think you said 43 million. 43 million.
Yeah, 43 million fly there a year. And they fly there without cannabis. So as people are becoming, you know, looking at Vegas as more of like a tourist and cannabis destination, that obviously sells, that's why sales have increased 25% quarter over quarter, year over year. So, so that's number one, why I like about Nevada. Nevada is a smart business state. You know, the taxes are low. They're very regulated and limited on licensing. You can't just go to Nevada and apply for a license. They open up a 2-month window and you have to go and get your license within that 2 months. And once that window's closed, the door's shut. You can't get a license. So it makes it very exclusive, which makes the price of cannabis high, which that's why Nevada has the highest price of cannabis on the West Coast. Now, Caliente, though, Nevada, where I got the cultivation at, Clover Creek, it's 2 hours outside of Las Vegas, 2 hours north in a city called Caliente. It's ideal for cultivation and greenhouses because we're at 4,200 feet elevation, the high of 92 in the summer, a low of 17 in the winter, and the dry climate works fantastic using wet walls to cool greenhouses. So that's why I was so attracted to this geographically, this location. And 276,000 square feet would be one of the largest cultivation operations on the West Coast if we were to build it all out. So you have to be out in, you know, in a desolate area to cultivate that much cannabis. In my opinion, because of odor concerns, you know, if you were to build a 276,000 square foot facility in the middle of Henderson or Las Vegas, well, you're going to have a lot of complaints, you know, and those are a lot of complaints. You don't want to put $20 million investment into a greenhouse when you're going to have neighbors talking to city council about the smell that's coming out of that place. So that's why I like Caliente. And that's why I like Nevada. So it's a pretty amazing opportunity that, you know, I got lucky with that one. You know, I happened to know somebody that was close to city council, and we were able to have that relationship with council to go and talk to them on more of a personal level, to help, you know, get us into that city to then apply for our state license with the state of Nevada, and both of them got approved. So, having that relationship, really got us in there.
And just to be able to talk and explain things.
Yeah, exactly.
And having that conversation about helping people learn about what is the industry, what you've been thinking a lot of things, you know, smell and that. So taking into account what you want to make sure that if it is approved, it is approved afterwards, that you don't have problems with it, right? From the neighbors. So just having that conversation, for you is how they learn, and then you can avoid mistakes on the back end.
Yeah, exactly. You know, giving them that information and being genuine about it, not just going in and saying, hey, like, we want to put this here. And like, when we went in, Clover genuinely cares about the best interests of that city. And look, if it came down to, you know, a project that I felt that would jeopardize the integrity of the city or cause a nuisance of any sort, we wouldn't be there, you know. And that's why when in city council, you know, there was two other gentlemen trying to get two other groups that were trying to get licensing there. I had put a 2-mile minimum radius around city hall. You had to be 2 miles away. I requested, just by my knowledge, you know, that they put a 2-mile radius around city hall to keep cannabis cultivation of cannabis out of the main hub of the city, because I knew that the smell was going to be a nuisance. And I knew if these other cannabis cultivators were growing in close to the city, close to population, that it's going to cause problems for clover, because you're going to get a big smell, you know, in down the street in the city with a ton of people around. And then people are automatically going to say, well, why did we bring these cannabis cultivators here? Like, we need to get them out of town. So I requested that council put a 2-mile radius around the main population of the city, and then printed out several articles and reports on Colorado's situation and Washington's situation with smell and being a nuisance. And they put it in. They put it into the law for the city, and we got a 2-mile radius around the main population. So I think that created a lot less problems for us in the future. And for clover's sake, solidified us in more there for a long period of time.
Great. That's this could pay dividends in the long run there that I didn't know about the smell.
It's
not aware of the smell, but there's so many people rushing in this industry that they're going to learn the hard way on a lot of things. And you learned you're going to buy $100,000 worth of air conditioners. You probably got to eyeball them, make sure that it's all about learning. $100,025 must have been hard to let go of, but I think you've generate a lot of turns on that investment.
I did. I learned a lot. And yeah, I've made a ton of mistakes. You know, like, I think the mistakes in business are probably the most important part of you doing business, you know, and it's what you take out of that mistake. You know, like, I remember 8 years ago when I built my first greenhouse, I had cooled it with air conditioners because my background was in indoor cultivation. So of course I think that, well, if you're going to cool a greenhouse, you should cool it with air conditioning. That didn't work. It was a terrible idea. I put like 12 tons of air conditioning in a 1500 square foot greenhouse. It was ridiculous.
It was cool though.
It wasn't cool enough. Barely.
Oh, very, okay.
Yeah.
So even all that, it still didn't work.
No, it still didn't work. So, then I learned about wet walls, and then the next greenhouse I built, you know, with wet walls. And, you know, I think mistakes are vital. And it's taking a step back and looking at how you could have done something differently and actually breathing and living that mistake or, you know, that error will change your life forever, you know, but being conscious of it, I think is vital for sure.
Sweet. Well, we've covered a lot. We'd probably go longer, but come to the end of our window today. Anything you'd like to leave the audience with or ways if they're interested to contact you?
Yeah, no, for sure. They can go on to www.clovercreekcultivation.com and reach out to us there. And if you want to check out Lux Lighting on Instagram, it's at LUXX Lighting. And you kind of see what we've done with that company. And no, I appreciate you having me on. It's been good. And thank you.
Oh, it's been quite informative. We've had conversations in the past, but I learned a ton. And where on Instagram can they find you?
So I don't have a.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
Yeah, okay. I don't have a personal. I have a LinkedIn. So my LinkedIn, it's Brandon Burkhart, Burkhart.
And we'll put that in the show notes and down in the episode description so people can find you. But you've explained to me how Instagram has done a lot of business with the cannabis industry.
Oh, I mean, Instagram is a gift. Like, Instagram's made most of my companies what they are today. You know, it is vital for marketing and building culture of your company in the cannabis industry, or I think in really any space. If you're a company and you're not utilizing the power of Instagram. Well, you need to get on it. You know, you need to be, you need to become a professional of marketing on Instagram. That is the vital to your success as a company. 100%.
Well, why don't we'll make that the next, we're going to have you on again. You have time. Okay. And we'll talk about Instagram marketing.
Hey, I would love that. That sounds great.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, Brandon. And good luck with the next grow. And we'll talk again.
Thanks, Alex.
If you're liking Confident ROI, or even if you don't, please leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to this podcast. Thanks.